my pleasure and privilege to introduce Ron Numbers. As you saw, he's the Hillsdale Professor of History and Science and Medicine Emeritus at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. The emeritus status is not quite mean retirement status, because he still has two students, that PhD students that he's working with, and several book projects. So he's a very prolific author and speaker. Actually, he's written numerous books and articles, edited books. That includes the Cambridge History of Science, which is a multi-volume series that is almost finished. I think volume six is
six of the eight.
It's six of the eight is in press, sort of.
But my Wheaton collaborator died.
We'll talk about that after. but also books that I would encourage you to look up and read. Galileo Goes to Jail and Other Myths About Science and Religion. That's a dynamite book. It's really fun. Short chapters that will surprise you over and over again in terms of myth busting. When Science and Christianity Meet, that's a very nice edited collection. And The Creationists, which is a very large, well-documented volume on the history of creationism. So Ron got his Bachelor of Arts in Mathematics and Physics, yay for Mathematics and Physics. That's the department I'm from the physics department, by the way, in case you didn't know. At Southern Missionary College, he got his MA in History from Florida State University, and then did his PhD in History of Science at the University of California, Berkeley. And as you saw, his title is on baptizing dinosaurs, and I happen to know that Ron believes in immersion rather than sprinkling, so at some time I'm looking forward to seeing him actually dunk that T-Rex. That's going to be great. So, welcome.
I believe in religious symbolism, so I thought I'd just dunk Robert instead. Would that work?
Sure, I can play T-Rex.
You can play T-Rex. Okay. Well, I'm delighted to be back here. I've been here a few times before, and it's always been very pleasant. Most of the time, I guess, except with one exception, I was here to speak at Wheaton College, but not to the ASA. I have been a long-time student of the ASA and occasionally published in the Journal of the ASA. So it's something of a homecoming. I'm going to talk to you this evening about dinosaurs. I've been intrigued by dinosaurs for years because when I grew up, dinosaurs were horrible. My parents, who were fundamentalist Christians, did not want me to have anything to do with dinosaurs. They were used as evidence for evolution, and they were almost certainly some type of satanic trick. And so dinosaur movies and dinosaur books were just odd. And then I realized that my upbringing wasn't all that exceptional, that a lot of conservative Christians were very suspicious about dinosaurs. But today, you go to the Creation Museum. I'm sure you all know about the Creation Museum in Northern Kentucky. It features almost 30 dinosaurs. And many of them are there with human beings frolicking in these nice scenes, I guess, Eden and post-Eden. The scenes are nicer for Eden than for post-Eden. And you go to the gift shop there, and it's loaded with dinosaur stuff. You can get stuffed dinosaurs. You can get dinosaur card games. You could get dinosaur anything you want in the gift shop at the Creation Museum. They are the new heroes of creation science, or young earth creationism. Well, this is something new and something counterintuitive, and so I thought I should find out. I tried for a while to interest a graduate student in tackling this, but none of my graduate students were that eager. None of them. I have one sitting over here. So I decided I'd do it myself. Now here's the short version about dinosaurs. Dinosaurs, at least in the American context, sort of started attracting attention in the scientific community in the 1860s. In the 1870s, particularly in the late 1870s, they started attracting attention in the secular press. And not very long thereafter, religious periodicals started mentioning the dinosaurs. It was clear from the beginning that the dinosaur explorers were using them to illustrate evolution. And yet, some of the religious press, there wasn't a lot of discussion, but there wasn't much concern about what this evidence for evolution might create. That was a bad use of language, wasn't it? As many of you know, in the early 1920s especially, there was an outbreak of anti-evolutionism in the United States, particularly among the group of people who call themselves Christian fundamentalists. Surprisingly, the anti-evolutionists said very little about dinosaurs. Most of them said nothing about dinosaurs. The two exceptions were an old Earth gap creationist named Harry Rimmer, who talked about dinosaurs as contradicting evolution, because he said, you know, here you have these 90-foot-long, ton, you know, weighing a ton, animals that are now represented by crocodiles. So instead of development from simple to complex, we've had shrinkage over the years. So, well, he didn't deny the existence of dinosaurs, but he thought that they represented something that undermined rather than supported the theory of evolution. The leading young Earth creationist, George McGrady Price, of that period, seems never to have doubted the actual existence of dinosaurs. Now, I should remind you, a lot of people didn't think dinosaurs really existed, that these were figments of the imagination of evolutionists. He had no doubt that they existed. He liked to regale his readers with accounts of how big and how long they were. So, occasionally you run across statements already that involve Satan. And as we'll see in a few minutes, Satan becomes more and more important to certain communities in terms of explaining how these monstrous beasts came into existence. So there's not much controversy about dinosaurs. A little sniping here and there. In the conservative Christian communities, but nothing major happens until 1945. In 1945, a group of young Earth creationists who had formed the Deluge Geology Society, that is, they were flood geologists who attributed all of the fossil record to the year of Noah's flood, ran across some accounts of the discovery in the Biloxi River in Texas of human prints, giant human prints, about 15 inches wide, in the same stratum with dinosaur prints. This was amazing, Because according to these evolutionists, dinosaurs had died out about 60 million years before humans came on the scene. And here you've had direct empirical evidence of humans walking in the same mass as dinosaurs. They got all excited about this. For a little bit, it was secret. Didn't want the news to get out around too much, and they sent parties down to investigate this evidence. And pretty soon they started publishing. They had a journal and in other religious publications about this discovery that collapsed the whole timescale for evolution to where humans and dinosaurs played together on Earth. Well, this was the result of a discovery a decade earlier by a dinosaur hunter for the American Museum of Natural History named Roland Berg. In the fundamentalist literature, the anti-evolution literature, he's frequently referred to as Dr. Bird, which he thought was very funny because he was a high school dropout. And he and the American Museum of Natural History in New York had received money from Mr. Sinclair. You know Sinclair Oil Company? And their symbol logo is a dinosaur. And so Mr. Sinclair was actively supporting the investigation of dinosaurs and paid for Berg to go down into the Pluxing River to follow up on a lead that there were some interesting fossils down there. So in 1938, Berg writes, when he went down there, he found these incredible dinosaur prints, as well as some that did look like humans. Now, he was a very sophisticated paleontologist, despite his lack of formal education, and he said, of course, these aren't humans, but some of them look like humans. And so in Natural History, he published an announcement of this. And then in another journal, a scientific journal, a journalist wrote, more or less talking as if these were genuine human fossils and that it would turn all the geologists into truck drivers. It was a hyperbolic joke. But these young Earth creationists in the Deluge Geology Society, which included a young man named Henry Morris, about whom we'll hear more in a minute, latched onto this. And they thought it was just hilarious that this find, even in the eyes of paleontologists, was going to send geologists into long-distance driving. In 1950, one of the leaders, or there were two guys who were leading out in this effort. Both of them were what you might call charitably cranks in the history of science. One had been a lawyer in Arkansas and then had moved to Los Angeles, barely eked out a living doing odd jobs. He lived in a little trailer, but he became prominent in this Deluge Geology group. And his colleague, who was a consulting geologist and sometimes built up as quite an impressive guy, was named Clifford Burdick. And Clifford Burdick was, during these years, the only geologist who was a young Earth creationist. But Burdick was a liar. There's no other way to say it. Verdict, and I'm especially personally offended by this, because Verdict during this period claimed he had a master's degree in geology from the University of Wisconsin-Madison. As a faculty member, I took the opportunity to check his record. He never got a degree from there. Then later on, he became something of a martyr in the history of science. He went to the University of Arizona to get his PhD, having said he already had a master's degree. And because of his creationist beliefs, he and many others have written, he was denied his PhD. Well, I found private correspondence from him to some creationist colleagues saying during his exams he had browned out and couldn't remember a thing. So it wasn't so much that he was that there was bias against him, but he had failed to perform and to finish his classes, respectively. But he was quite the entrepreneur. And even fellow young earth creationists at times kept him at arm's length because he would embarrass them repeatedly. He also, as I said, was a consulting geologist, and he tried to get them, fellow creationists, to invest in his expeditions to find minerals in the West. And I think some of them got burned at a personal level. Anyway, 1950... he publishes an article on this great discovery in a fairly mass-produced magazine called The Signs of the Times. It's a Seventh-day Adventist magazine. And announced the end of evolution. And described the Paluxy River fossils. Well, this created something of an uproar. One of Roland Byrd's friends, Byrd was the one who had discovered these originally, sent him a copy of the Signs of the Times, and he was outraged by how they characterized his findings. But this brought them a lot of publicity, and sort of the snowball effect began about 1950 as word of the Paluxy River fossils spread. In 1961, Henry Morris, who was a member of the Deluge Geology Society and had gone on to get a PhD in engineering, hydraulic engineering from the University of Minnesota, joined with an Old Testament scholar named John Whitcomb Jr. to publish a book called The Genesis Flood, which was a sensation in the evangelical scientific world, because what it did was take the young earth flood geology of George McCready Price and the Seventh-day Adventist into the mainstream. Surprisingly, except for Price, all the leaders of the anti-evolution movement in the 1920s were old earth creationists who believed either that the days of Genesis were ages or that there had been this huge gap between the beginning and the Edenic creation. Now came along two card-carrying fundamentalists saying, no, the correct interpretation of Genesis was there had been about 6,000 years, and the entire fossil bearing strata had been deposited in the year of Noah's flood. They had bought Clifford Burdick, hook, line, and sinker. And as another creationist said when he read the book, he said the real bombshell for fellow creationists in the book was the revelation of human and dinosaur fossils together in the Paluxy River Valley. That came about, they published that book in 1961. Late in the 1960s, another creationist, A.E. Wilder Smith. Some of you may have heard about him. He was famous in Krishna circles for having 3 PhDs from European universities. I don't think he had to do any coursework for a PhD over there. But he was at the time teaching at the University of Illinois Medical Center, and he found a publisher named Shaw in Wheaton to publish this book. Is Shaw still publisher? He's become a fossil. Anyway, he took advantage of his time in North America to get Burdick to take him down to examine these giant human footprints along with the dinosaurs, and became convinced that they were absolutely authoritative. And so in this book he published, Man's Destiny, in the late 60s, he then comes to endorse the validity of the Pluxee River evidence. Now, a sad interlude. The American Scientific Affiliation was created in 1941. So it existed throughout these decades. But it did not engage. In fact, several people commented about the lack of involvement of the ASA in saying anything. This had turned into a huge controversy among evangelical Christians and other creationists. And yet, except in a few book reviews, ASA writers weren't saying anything. And this became a topic of some conversation on the sidelines about why the ASA was so quiet. Who's the oldest person here? I need an answer to that question.
I'm about 77.
77. Why was the ASA so quiet? I figured I'd get an answer here, if anywhere.
I don't think Norm was involved.
Norm was not involved. Oh, okay. Darn. I'll have to keep looking. But I myself am very curious. As I say, in a couple of reviews, mention is made, say, a review of the Genesis Flood about the Pluxee fossils. But no conversation, no investigations down there. In 1975, a member of the ASA named Richard Olley, some of you may have known him, he lived in this area, did some history of science as well, did publish an article called The Footprint Hoaxes. And by 75, as we'll see, evidence was coming to light that even from creationist researchers, that these fossils were not to be trusted. As I said earlier, Satan played a significant role in the discussion of dinosaurs, has played and continues to play a significant role in the discussion of dinosaurs. I'll read you just one passage, particularly valuable because it appeared in the Journal of the American Scientific Affiliation in 1984 in a piece by Conrad Hyers called Dinosaur Religion. It's a very interesting one. The most interesting part is a quotation from a radio evangelist from Tennessee, exhorting on the theme of evolution. So if you'll pardon a few minutes of reading. Friends, the work of the devil is being carried out under many guises right under our very noses. I was walking down the streets of one of our great cities, and I came upon this establishment, the Museum of Natural History. There was a sign out in front of this edifice that said, "Come, see, and hear about dinosaurs." I was curious about what went on in such places, so I walked in there, and there was this man, a tool of the devil, preaching about monstrous creatures to all these little unsuspecting children from a school. He was holding in his hand and reading from a book called Prehistoric Animals. Now, nothing prehistoric could possibly be Christian. So I snatched the book from his hand. I was totally upset. In these perilous times when the Antichrist in our government says, no, you children cannot have prayers in schools, but you can have dinosaur religion taught every day. And here in this unholy temple of dinosaurs, children are being preached to from false Bibles and taught to worship idols that never existed. And in their minds, belief in these creatures is taking the place of the knowledge of God and God's Word. So I cast the book down the steps and stomped on it. And then I tried then and there to plan how I could mount a crusade against the new devil religion of dinosaur belief. Dinosaurs are the work of the devil. They are the devil's plaything. Such godless communist dinosaurs must be destroyed before it carries us all to perdition. I mean, some people felt strongly about dinosaurs. The curious thing about this is that Conrad Hyers goes on to say that although this preacher may have been a little bit naive, he had every reason to be concerned about dinosaur religion and the evolutionary ideas that were based on dinosaur religion. Various creation scientists have had for 60-some years debates over where dinosaurs might fit in to the creation scheme. Did God create dinosaurs in the Garden of Eden? Or did Satan, a master genetic engineer, as some of them have called him, bring them about during the period after the creation before the flood? And then there's the problem of whether dinosaurs were preserved on the ark or extinguished by the flood. And this has led to some interesting speculations. There's not unanimity of opinion about this. Some very clever creationists have said, well, you wouldn't put a big dinosaur on the ark, but you have baby dinosaurs. And plus, they wouldn't eat that much. Or if you heard the lecture at 4:30, they wouldn't create as much crap. Clean up, that'd be good. Or, better yet, put a dinosaur egg on the ark. And then it can turn into a baby dinosaur after the ark. My favorite dinosaur flood picture, a cartoon, a two-pager by Jim Pinkoski, who works with a ministry called Amazing Facts, has this cartoon of evil angels rounding up dinosaurs during the flood to attack the ark and kill Noah and his family. Now, I know that's biblical literalism, but it's a little imagination thrown in there too, I think. So, a great deal of controversy, a great deal of enthusiasm about these alleged animals. In 1975, a biologist on the faculty of Loma Linda University, a creationist university, named Bernie Neufeld, reported research. He and some colleagues had gone out to the Paluxy River, had investigated some of the fossils that had been dug up from the river, and found that there weren't any human footprints at all. That there had been some carved prints by enterprising people in Texas. There had been a number of claims, but that there was no evidence that these were other than shallow dinosaur footprints, which even if you were a flexiologist, try to imagine a scenario in which dinosaurs and humans are walking side by side during the flood after a number of strata had been deposited and it was all mush. This would have been quite a feat, just if you're a flood geologist. And Neufeld's research, published in a couple of places, started attracting considerable attention in large part because he himself was allegedly a flood geologist who believed in the flood, but was a good enough scientist to say that the evidence was not sound at all. In the wake of his study, some other people, including a couple members of the ASA, Ronnie Hastings and Glenn Cupid, began serious research down there. And by the mid-80s, among conscientious creation scientists, the Paluxy River evidence was pretty much discredited. In the meantime, however, the Institute for Creation Research, formed in 1972, had picked up on this as key evidence for flood geology, for scientific creationism, as they called it. And Henry Morris's son had made a career out of promoting the Paluxy River evidence. In the wake of these exposés, he withdrew and said, I don't think we can any longer use them to oppose evolution. And it's not because there was any fraud involved. It's because the evidence has changed over time and so the footprints don't look the same that they had originally appeared to be. In the early 70s, a group called Films for Christ had produced a film called Footprints in Stone, featuring the Paluxy River footprints. And this had been shown all over the country to sometimes very large groups and was very influential. Well, Glenn Cupid, one of these researchers, took John Morris and took the people who had produced footprints in stone down to the Paluxy River to show them why this could not be sustained. And John Morris writes a retraction, says we're not going to use it anymore, and Films for Christ quit circulating footprints in stone. It looked like a victory for good science. But what happened is that the Institute for Creation Research and John Morris said almost immediately, well, we don't have any evidence, good evidence from Paluxy, but there's a lot more evidence around the world of humans and dinosaurs living together. So this is great evidence against evolution. So they gave up the controversial Paluxy evidence, but then hung on to the bigger picture of dinosaurs and humans cohabiting the Earth. Not everybody went along with this. There was a group of, trying to be kind here, marginal people with degrees from things you call degree mills, several of them who insisted that everybody had been right about the Paluxy River, fossils. And one of them opened a museum nearby in a little trailer. Another one opened a dinosaur park in Pensacola, Florida, before he went to jail. These were not your leading scientists in America who kept promoting this. So, although many Christians continued to doubt whether dinosaurs had really existed, and they doubted that because of the use they had been put to support evolution, that made them suspect. The masses of young Earth creationists adopted the dinosaurs to illustrate how there had only been a few thousand years between creation and the present when dinosaurs and humans roamed the Earth together. And hence we find in the Creation Museum in Kentucky that dinosaurs, rather than appearing as suspect evolutionary creatures or animals genetically engineered by Satan himself, are now primary evidence for a young Earth creation.
Okay, so we've got time for some questions. The floor is now open. Encourage students to lead if you've got some questions.
You mentioned that after the human footprint with the dinosaur, when that was kind of exposed as a forgery or something or other, but they turned to evidence of humans with dinosaurs globally. What would they be pointing to that would show that?
Oh, they found some in Australia. They found some in other places. There was
just like human bones with dinosaur bones.
No bones. Oh, well, this was one of the things that really upset some of the more sophisticated evangelical scientists, like Carl Darabian. You know, didn't he come from here?
Tarikian
said, "My God, if you take the story of the flood literally, it was used to wipe out humans, primarily. That's what it was aimed at, anyway." And he said, "There should have been human fossils like flies with dinosaurs, if in fact this is what happened." But he said, "We don't find any human fossils with dinosaurs." So no bones at all. And then there was in the 20s a discovery in the Arizona Havasupai Canyon of drawings in a cave where there were some drawings that looked like they might be dinosaurs. And so obviously the dinosaurs hadn't drawn them. So they had been drawn by humans who lived with those dinosaurs. What evolutionists, being so committed to their theory, denied that those were really pictures of dinosaurs, that they were some other animal. Did I answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I was going to comment, I should have done it earlier. I'm 86.
You're my man.
Yeah. And I wanted to say that what the ASA was doing was Russell Mixter was on the board, and he was a professor here.
Yes.
And he was writing a very important paper that you probably know about, but called Creation and Evolution.
Correct.
As an evangelical scientist.
Mm-hmm.
So he was more interested in that than he was in the footprints down in Texas.
Uh-huh. Well, Russell Mixter did a very important job, so maybe it was wise for him not to pay too much attention to that. But thank you. Appreciate that. I love Russell Mixter. You know why? I talked to him before he died, interviewed him, and I thought he was very astute. He once wrote, he says, he promoted progressive creationism. as opposed to theistic evolutionism, which I suspect a lot of Wheaton people now believe in. But he said, use progressive creationism, because if you call something a rose, people expect it to smell like a rose. Yeah? You call it evolution, you're going to cause trouble. Sorry.
Dot, did you?
I was just going to mention that Walter Hearn's visit here in 1961, was that right? Right, he was here in the 60s, had set some of the pace for Wheaton in terms of thinking about these things with Russ Mixter and so on. But my question has to do with perceptions.
Yeah.
Which is one of the things that is a mistake in this whole thing by evangelicals. So how do we learn from the history of this issue to correct perceptions that are wrong as we think through the current issues in terms of origins, and how do we project that into the future?
Now, I know you're dean here, and I shouldn't do anything to undermine my discipline, but most historians would avoid saying, history teaches us. That there's any straightforward lesson to come from this. I'm not sure what the lesson is. I think each one of us must decide personally what that will be for us.
That's a
puppet. That's a puppet. So the true lesson here is, don't put up with this crap. Thump it out. Like the Tennessee radio preacher. You know, you take this stuff and you throw it down the steps and you stomp on it when you have a chance. That's right. That's the message, right?
I believe there were three Wheaton professors that were invited to be in that movie. I've never seen that movie because I wasn't raised evangelical, but... I wish I could get a copy of it. I guess it is impossible to find.
You know, I would love to buy a copy.
Yeah. But
is there a black market?
Yeah. but my understanding, and some of this is actually in your book, The Creationist, that Paul Wright and Jerry Haddock and Doug Block were invited to the filming and did try to express their skepticism, but they didn't feel that it came across clearly in the film.
Oh, Paul Wright was really upset. He was a professor of geology here and had been quoted in this film as being supportive, and he was, you know, very upset with the producers. And Dr. Block, who at the time was at Rock Valley College or someplace there, had been used by them and had it as well. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Other questions? Yes?
I kind of missed how the jump from the stuff being discredited to now all of a sudden it's the highlight of this museum in Kentucky. How did that happen?
Sorry about that.
Where does that Christianization of... Well, is it just the fact of humans and...
This is where the baptizing comes in.
This is, yeah, where they got baptized. Maybe I just sprinkled them rather than immersed them. Okay. So for about 20 years, the Pluxey River Mayan prints, as they were called, get huge attention from young earth creations. Then they're shown not to be valid, except for a few people on the very fringes. But by then, it's too important, this argument that humans and dinosaurs lived on the face of the earth, which a young earth creationist would say, you know, God created, well, Ken Ham says, on the sixth day he created dinosaurs. And the humans were created on the sixth day, so obviously they were here on earth together. That this notion had become so wonderful. How could you argue with that, especially if you could find other sites around the world where there seemed to be human and dinosaur fossils? And so Paluxy gets shoved under the table, but the notion of humans and dinosaurs just explodes among young Earth creationists. And the dinosaurs prosper accordingly. So dinosaurs are good now. They have Christian birthday parties around dinosaurs. They have anything you want that's related to dinosaurs. They probably even have dinosaurs for old folks parties or something like that.
Dinosaur playing cards?
I have them back. From the Creation Museum. Yes, wow. Indeed. But being raised a good Christian, I don't know how to play cards.
Of course, a lot of the dinosaurs are carnivores, and so for
young creation,
the carnivores, they eat carnivores.
Oh yeah.
And the kind of, I think before the fall, a lot of people have trouble with actually hunting and killing other animals and that kind of thing. That evolution would say how survival of the fittest, so that animals before the fall would eat plants.
I hope so,
but not meat.
No.
That's not a problem for the younger creationists.
I don't think so. Before the fall.
Right.
So there was no death before the fall.
Right. So
you couldn't eat anything else, any other animal.
Right, and so these dinosaurs have ate other animals.
Well, they were herbivores. The ones God created on the sixth day were herbivores.
After the fall.
Then some of them got wild and started eating other
animals. Your comment about the apparent loss or lack of evidence of human fossil remains from ancient times.
Not much. This has been a problem since the early 19th centuries, when geologists and paleontologists constructed the geological column. And by 1840, at the latest, evangelical Christian Bible interpreters had abandoned the notion that Noah's flood had been geologically significant, maybe restricted to some area in the Middle East. And one of the big reasons for that is the same one that Rikian pointed out, is if the flood had been responsible for depositing most of the fossil-bearing strata, then why didn't you find a whole bunch of human fossils there? So it must be, if Noah's flood was sent to punish humans primarily, then it happened after the geological column had been deposited. And so even your most Bible-believing Christians adopted an old-age creationist view with a limited role for the Genesis flood by about 1840. That doesn't mean all people did, but that was even in the among the Evangelical Alliance, that would have been the primary line.
Yes?
You said something about the cave drawings in Arizona.
Yeah.
And I was kind of stopped talking about it. I was curious what the resolution of that was, because I mean, did they just find that it was not actually that old, or
No. The dinosaur drawings aren't dinosaurs. That's the problem. There are other animals that had been drawn. But some creationists still like to cite that as evidence that humans were drawing dinosaurs on cave walls. But And the creationists come back and say, these evolutionists are so ideologically committed to their notion of evolution that despite the evidence in front of their eyes of dinosaur drawings, they won't accept it. And they would make fun of scientists for not doing it.
Can you comment about in Job chapter 38. Ooh. Behemoth is described.
The what?
Behemoth.
Behemoth,
yeah.
There's also the
those are biblical dinosaurs?
It could seem like it.
I know some people have said that. I don't know. It's spelled differently, so I don't accept it. We have a distinguished biblical scholar here. What's the answer to that, please?
The description of either Behemoth or Leviathan don't match any known dinosaurs, especially the part about breathing fire.
Yeah.
And having multiple heads.
Well, those are dragons, right?
Yeah. Well, some people did that too. They're chaos creatures.
Okay.
And so but certainly there is a whole line of interpretation that tries to identify them as dinosaurs, but the descriptions just don't work out.
Thank you very much. That is definitive.
I wonder if instead of thinking this in terms of good science and bad science, think of it in terms of elite science and communication of silence and science in the public sphere. It seems to me that creationists would be hard pressed to give up the human dinosaur footprints, because that's going to be far more effective. You could do a 2-page thing on that, that'll do more than a whole book in terms of communicating their message to the larger public.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is, of course, the problem going the other direction. Is how do you answer these things other than debunking them? But a debunking would be a technical explanation that's not going to get readership in the public sphere. And you know, that's, I mean, how do we deal with that? I mean, that seems to would drive.
Well, you don't. Well, I mean, that's why you lose out. That's why creationism is so popular in public polls. I mean, the notion you put this creation story up against monkeys to men. You know which one's going to win? Yeah. Now, we could, but we shouldn't say, well, there's something wrong with science teaching in our schools and blame the science teachers. But science teachers aren't perfect either. And they have to deal with young people who learn things in their homes. So even if we really, I do think the teaching of evolution in American schools from universities down is abysmal. And surveys indicate that that's the case. But I'm not sure, even if it were great, that it would substantially change things.
Time for one more question? Sure.
If you, I don't know whether you take the day age or progressive creation, but where would you fit the dinosaurs into the 6 days? If you take them as not a 6,000-year-old universe, but as an older universe, where would you fit them?
Before the 6 days.
You'd fit them in the beginning.
Before that.
Where is the before that in the Bible?
I don't have any idea. I mean, that's the true answer. I have no. I think dinosaurs died out rather suddenly about 60 million years ago.
Yeah, we can agree with that.
And I don't know when they first appeared. I don't know when.
I'm asking.
Maybe another 100 million years before that.
Yeah.
But then, that doesn't fit into the days of Genesis for me.
I believe it does, but that's okay.
That's okay.
I'm not.
When they introduced this, they said this is a good place to disagree and still be friends.
Yes, so one more.
What do you know about the soft tissue that's been found in dinosaur fossils?
I don't know, except that I know that there's been something of this and of warm-blooded dinosaurs, and I'm not sure that it has any implications for a religious understanding. Do you think there is? I don't know.
It supposedly indicates that dinosaurs aren't nearly as old as we think they are.
Oh, I guess I'd be suspicious of that, yeah.
All right, well, let's thank Ron Numbers.